My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Hawk, and their dog Ninja.
And sometimes their cat Freddy. But never the ferrets.
Hey everyone, this is NFL linebacker Avery Williamson, and you're listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 370 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, we always start off the show the same way, thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks for all of you men, women, and service animals that risk it all every single day for our safety and our freedom.
You guys got that right. That's something that we never take for granted. And we pray for you guys every single day. Thank you for keeping us safe. We love you all.
Also, we like to remind people that if you are struggling with something right now that's causing you some mental turmoil, please reach out and talk to somebody. Don't try to hold all that stuff in. That will not help you in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, it'll probably just fester and make it worse. So I can't acknowledge how much of a help it is to reach out and talk to somebody, whether it's us, whether it's the group, whether it's somebody professional, whether it's the helpline, the crisis line that's out there. Talk to somebody. Trust me, people care about you way more than what you realize.
Yeah, everything Jerry said. And You can also call the crisis hotline at 988. You can text 741-741. If you need to talk to Jerry or I, we'll give you our phone numbers. We don't have a problem with that. Anything we can do to help you guys, just please reach out to somebody. Don't hold all this stuff in to yourselves because it's not doing you any good. So let that crap out of your system. You'll feel much better. And like I said, day or night, somebody's always going to be there for you guys. So we love you all. Please reach out.
So Tracy, I know it's not that time of the show, but we had a review that I wanted to read.
Okay.
Because I thought it fit in with what we're talking about. This is from SK Morris 007. I found and started listening in early spring this year. I appreciate the fact that y'all support the troops and are genuinely care about people, especially those going through a rough time. It's great that y'all do provide support and even yourselves. I love your stories. I don't miss an episode. This may sound weird, but your voices are comforting to hear every day. Y'all are a great team, and I love your humor between each other. My dad was a Vietnam vet and one of two survivors from his platoon.
Wow.
I lost him due to suicide when I was 7 years old. I congratulate you, too, for all that you do.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you so much. And, you know, those kind of reviews really mean a lot to us. Especially the one when you say our voices are soothing, especially since I sound like a man.
Why is he? I sound like a man, and I'm soothing.
Dude, yeah, it has to be you because I cannot shake this stuff I have, and it's really getting on my nerves. Anybody got any? I can't taste. I haven't been able to taste anything for like 2-3 weeks now.
And it's not COVID. We tested for that.
Oh, yeah. I've done tested for that a couple of times, but it's just so annoying. But anyway, all kidding aside, we love that review. Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Tracy, we also have a special guest tonight, Mr. Rick Hale. He's an author, paranormal investigator. He's been on the show before. He hosts the Shadow Initiative Paranormal TV with our other good friend, Stephen Lancaster from Norman the Doll fame.
Very cool.
And he comes on and chats with us in a little bit. So a lot of fun stuff. He's got some really cool stories from back when he was the paranormal investigator to talk about.
Looking forward to it.
All right, Tracy. So we've done a few stories from San Antonio in the past. I know we've covered a theater that was there, the infamous haunted train tracks that have the children's hand prints on them. That's kind of where that whole story started. You'll hear that story everywhere now, but it started in San Antonio. Man, we've covered the Menger Hotel and a little place called the Alamo. Might have heard of it.
I think I did hear about it once or twice or 50,000 times. No, just kidding.
But San Antonio's got so many haunted attractions and so many haunted houses and stuff there that I felt that it was time to revisit that beautiful city.
Well, I think that's a great idea.
Nice.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, though, that we're going to be talking about well-known stories because, as you know, I love the lesser-known stories.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight we're going to cover two restaurants. Let's jump right into the first story, the Alamo Street Restaurant. Now, this is located at 1150 South Alamo Street at the corner. I think it's Wick Street, W-I-C-K-E. So as far as I know, this place is actually still open today.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you can go by and check it out. This location is said to have at least four spirits calling it home. It originally was a Methodist church built in 1913. It was sold to Marcy Lawson and her husband back in 1976. At the time they bought it, it actually had been deserted for several years. Had a bunch of graffiti and stuff like that on it. Marcy and her husband Bill spent a lot of time and money restoring the place back to its original glory. They converted it into a dinner theater. It's now on the National Register of Historic Places. So the restaurant area is the basement where the old Sunday school rooms used to be. And the upper floor is where the sanctuary used to be. And now that's a cozy little theater.
Very cool.
At one point, some gifted psychics and medium came to visit one night. And they picked the night. Obviously, they didn't have a player going on. That would have been bad to try to be figuring, what is that I hear? I think it's Shakespeare. But, yeah. So anyway, they came and visit on a night where the theater was dark, so to speak. Marcy and Bill kind of always felt like there was some type of a spirit or a ghost or something in there. But the psychic and the mediums said that they found four such entities.
All right. You want to have multiples, right? You don't want to just be stuck with one. How boring is that?
Well, they ain't got no way to play with.
That's true.
These four spirits were so happy that they had no intentions of ever leaving the theater. The best known spirit is a young woman in a white Victorian dress who has frequently been seen in the former choir loft. She's also been seen sitting in the audience during some of the shows. Of the four entities, two of them are kind of, we'll say major, because their presence is well known. Uh-huh. And the other two, we'll say, are a little bit smaller entities.
Well, how cool would it be if she came down and sat by you in the theater? Dude.
That would be freaky.
Oh my gosh. That'd be so awesome.
The woman in white told the mediums that her name was Margaret. Now, the guess here is that she's the spirit of Margaret, I think, Jething. Margaret once lived on Gunther Street, which is about a block away from the old church. She died back in 1975. The woman in white started appearing about a year after Margaret's death. Now, there are several different reasons why they think that this Margaret Jething might be the ghost at their place. First of all, she wants to stay upstairs where the plays are.
Oh,
she's never downstairs at all. So you see, Margaret was a former actress. She often performed in New York and even in Europe. She even appeared one time on Broadway in a play with Clark Gable.
Ooh, nice.
Here is where she is usually seen, but it's usually during rehearsal, sometimes during an actual performance, but she pops up in the audience out there. Apparently, Margaret was a very attractive lady, and she always wore white dresses cut and styled in Victorian manner, even though it was not that time period.
Yeah.
So when you think about a woman being seen in a white Victorian dress, you would think it was probably somebody from the 1800s, yet this was somebody that was from that same time period.
Yeah. Well, you like what you like.
Margaret's old house opened up for tours. Like I said, it was right around the corner. They opened up for tours, and inside there were numerous pictures of her. Enough so that several of the actors say that they are absolutely sure that Margaret is the woman in white at the theater. They all know what she looks like.
Well, no denying it don't sound like.
Let's also remember that the psychics and the mediums were told that her name was Margaret, so it all matches up. All right, Tracy, let's move on to the second spirit here. This is probably the most fun spirit. He goes by Little Eddie. It's thought that Eddie showed up at the theater right about the same time they brought in a Victorian-era wicker wheelchair.
Hell, I remember those. Don't be a smart aleck.
He's thought to be about 10 years old, and it is thought that he was confined to a wheelchair in real life, perhaps. That's why he came along with the wheelchair there. Maybe that was his wheelchair. I'm not exactly sure.
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense.
But he enjoys playing pranks. And it's almost like he's making up for the lost time that he had in real life where he couldn't do these things.
Good for him.
The old wheelchair is actually still there. It's upstairs in the prop room.
Oh, man. That would be cool to see that.
Yeah, it would be. The mediums and the psychics say that his name was Edward, but he preferred to be called Eddie.
Good name. My daddy's name.
Yep. My uncle's name as well.
Yep. Both are dead.
Okay, then. He is active and pretty mischievous, as you would expect a young child with a new lease on the afterlife would be. He really used to tease the cook, Victoria Sotelo, back in the 1990s. When she would arrive every morning, the first thing she would do is light the ovens that she needed to bake the muffins and the bread for the noon meal that would be up and coming. Eddie must have been on a low-carb diet or something, because he would always turn the oven off when Victoria's back was turned.
Just because he didn't want him to bake all the way?
I think he just wanted to be funny.
Oh.
Finally, she would say, "All right, Eddie, let's cut that out." And usually, he would get the message, and the oven would stay on from that point. Sometimes when Victoria would lean into the big fridge to get something out, she would feel a shove in her back like someone was trying to push her into the fridge. This kid with the ovens in the fridge, he's either hot or he's cold.
That's right. That's right.
She's even heard her name called. Eddie will say, "Victoria. Oh, Victoria." That sounds like something a kid would say. Sometimes Eddie gets a little too carried away, and he pulls shelves out of the refrigerator and out of the microwave. Now, Tracy Marcy, the owner we discussed her earlier, she said that on several occasions during the lunchtime, the crowd at the restaurant would watch as a big wooden serving spoon would rise off of the steam table and then levitate across the room and drop into the carpeted floor where the dining tables were.
I like him. He's pretty funny.
Obviously, numerous customers and staff members have witnessed this occurrence. On another occasion, Marcy said she offered to help an elderly lady carrying her plate from the buffet. Something grabbed a plate from her hand and threw it to the ground.
Oh, dang. He does not know the meaning of "to the table."
Marcy swears that she didn't drop the plate, and she swears that it was yanked from her hand.
Oh, now see, that would make me mad.
The third spirit is a woman named Henrietta. She was once a seamstress. She pretty much just sits in the tower and watches the Alamo Street traffic. Why are you laughing?
I was just thinking, when you made that plate and Dewey ate it. I don't know why that made me think of that.
So that story, since we're full of inside jokes, we were at a church homecoming. And there was a gentleman there named Dewey. He's got to be 90 years old.
He ain't that old yet.
He's pretty close.
Nah, him and Daddy were about the same age.
Okay, how old was your dad?
Like 84.
Okay. Pretty close.
Well, yeah.
Mid-80s, we'll say. I went and fixed a plate, and I set it down at an outside like picnic table area where everybody was sitting. And then I went to go get something else. I think it was like one other thing that I didn't have room for or something. And when I came back, my plate was in front of Dewey, and he was just sitting there eating on it. So I didn't say anything. I just went and fixed another plate. I don't know if he had a plate somewhere else and he just misplaced it.
Hard. I know. That was so funny. He just, Zach, I don't know if you had to be there, but he was just chowing down on that plate. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
I had like napkins. I think I went to get napkins is what it was. And when I came back, there was no food.
You just looked at him like, oh, well, I guess I better go fix me another plate.
So anyway, Henrietta was a seamstress. And she pretty much just sat in the tower and watched the traffic below. Kind of boring.
Yeah, that's kind of boring.
Sometimes, though, she is joined by another spirit, our fourth spirit, who's an elderly man. Now, the psychics describe him as a bland ghost who is just there.
Oh, well, that
sucks.
You thought
Henrietta was boring. They seem to think that...
What do they call him? An introvert? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
You kind of keep to yourself or whatever?
They seem to think that this is the spirit that Deborah Latham once saw. Now, Deborah was a playwright, and she also did a lot of work there at the theater. So she wrote many of the productions that they actually did.
Oh, good, good.
She stayed late one night, being the director. She wanted to work on some sound tapes for an upcoming play. Now, after a few hours, her butt was probably hurting. She got up to make sure that all the doors were locked and shut because, you know, after all, she was going to be there all alone. She does that, goes back and sits down, starts working again. Well, a few hours later, she had to take a bathroom break. She walks through the dining room to the ladies' room. When she finished and headed back, to her workplace, she had to walk through the dining room again, and she could clearly see there was a guy sitting at one of the tables, an elderly man with gray hair. He's just sitting there all by his lonesome. Remember, she's already locked up.
Yeah.
Her first thought was, oh no, I'm a goner.
She's probably like, he must have been in the bathroom after I locked the doors and just sitting there not knowing how to get out.
She had no clue who the man was or how he got in there. She finally mustered up the nerve to say, good What's evening, up? Sir. Is there something I can do for you? She said the old man just turned around and looked at her, and then he disappeared.
I mean, he could have answered her. How rude.
Deborah decided that she had done enough work for the evening and promptly left. Back in the mid-1990s, there was an Elvis Presley collection of memorabilia that was on loan to the restaurant. Now, one of these items was a life-size cardboard cutout of Elvis.
Yum.
It was hanging on the wall. One day, a group of actors were all in the dining room discussing an upcoming play. During this discussion, the Elvis picture came off the wall, flew across the room, and landed on a table.
Well, he must have not liked their plans.
They wanted to make sure that people know that it did not fall off the wall. So Deborah said, little Eddie, put that back.
She's like, what do you blame me for all this? Other people in here doing it.
Believe it or not, the cardboard cutout rose from the table. It backed across the room and reattached itself to the hanger on the
Dude. Wall. Dude, oh my gosh. Well, see, he was a good little boy there.
Yep. Let's go to New Year's Eve, 1995.
Let's do it.
There was a big party. It says that. It says it was a big party at the restaurant. But then it says the party was just about over. 1996 had just been ushered in. The band was packing up to leave, and it was just one couple left at the table. So it's just barely after midnight. Everybody's already left, and the band's packing up.
Dang. What
kind of a big party's that?
No doubt.
It started at like...
No, the party shouldn't start till after...
On New Year's, you would think. Yeah,
of course.
It's like they made it sound like the party started at 11, and then by 12, everybody had to get the hell out. Anyway, Marcy and some of the staff were getting ready to close up and go home. They were going to leave all the cleanup for the morning crew. How nice.
Very cool. Very cool.
That's about the time that Marcy saw a champagne flute rise from an empty table. It hovered in the air for a second or two. Then the stem snapped in two, and the flute part fell back to the table.
What's a flute? The bowl the champagne sits in? Is that what that is?
Yeah, you know.
Like with the ice in it?
The thinner glass. Then you got the stem and the base.
Oh.
Remember the flutes are the really thin.
Oh, no, never mind. I know what you're talking about.
That you drink champagne out of. It'd be appropriate for a night like New Year's.
Yeah.
Not the instrument that they play. Like, you know.
You done?
Okay. The spirits are so well known at the restaurant that there is a printed giveaway sheet at the cashier stand for the diner that for the diners to take actually with them and read. That tells them all about each spirit. Marcy says that the ghosts bring good luck to the place, and it would really be boring if they left. In fact, someone even suggested that they do an exorcism, and Marcy and the staff were horrified at the fact.
Oh.
They didn't want to get rid of the spirits.
I don't blame them. If you're going to be somewhere you work and you want to have a good time, then don't send the party away.
I agree. Tracy, this next story is about the Bright Shawl Tea Room, S-H-A-W-L. Like
a shawl you wear?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Bright Shawl was named after a popular novel back in the 1920s by author Joseph Hergerheimer Schmidt. His name is my name, too.
Sorry.
The older section of this semi-private club used to be a limestone house built on the corner of Augusta and Brooklyn streets by Dr. C.E.R. King. He built it for his wife and family. And what a big family he had. He had 9 children. It was designed by a popular architect by the name of Alfred Giles sometimes in the 1890s. Stop.
Sorry.
He designed many of the finest homes in the King William Historic District and the beautiful stone officers' quarters along Staff Post Road at Sam Houston. So the Junior League established a tea room. It was meant as a source of income for the organization back in 1925. It was eventually moved to the present location in 1929, and since then, there have been some major additions. Once back in 1975 and another in 1990. Now, one-time manager Barbara Perkins, she said that several things have happened during her tenure at the Tea Club. On one occasion, they moved a portrait of Miss Joan Bennett. Now, Miss Bennett was the very first Junior League president.
Wonder why they moved it.
They just wanted to put it somewhere else.
Yeah, well, duh.
So they moved the picture from the living room to the boardroom. So I guess they wanted it in their boardroom.
Oh, okay.
Since she was the first.
Well, sure. That should be an honor. Right?
Yeah. This was in the old section that was formerly the King House. Well, every day when the staff would show up, the picture would be on the floor. They eventually moved the picture back to the original location, and there had not been any other cases of the picture coming off the wall.
I wonder why she didn't want to move like that.
I don't know. I guess she just didn't want to be in the boardroom.
Huh. Or maybe she's not trying not to brag.
I don't know. Maybe because it was part of the older part of the house. I don't know.
Oh.
There was another time when one of the accountants was working late one evening. She went to the restroom. When she passed by the boardroom, she noticed that the light was on. So she turned it off and went to the ladies' room. When she came out, she was astonished that the light in the boardroom was back on. She turned it off again. The lights continued to turn off and on throughout the evening with no explanation whatsoever. So finally, as she's leaving for the evening, she turned the light off just before setting the alarm. She goes out the door, she gets into her car, and as she starts to drive out the Brooklyn Street exit, she looks back at the building through her rearview mirror just in time to see the light turn on again.
Dude. I would have just left it on. Did she keep driving? I would have.
Yeah, she kept going.
All right.
The Tea Room does monthly art shows at the gallery section of the Brightshaw. These feature local artists. So these are pretty popular events around town, and it gives some exposure to the local artists, and at the same time, it gives members a chance to purchase some pretty cool art. One artist was featured at one point of these particular events. And this artist, well, let's just say he had kind of a modern contemporary style. At least 3 of his pieces of works were purple cows.
I love it.
Well, evidently the spirit at the Brightshaw did not like the purple cows.
Well, she prefers like black and white ones.
I guess, boring. For 3 nights in a row, Barbara Perkins was called at her home at 3 a.m., because the alarms were going off at the Brightshaw. Each time she went to check things out, she found the same thing. The 3 paintings of the purple cows were face down on the floor. The wall hangers were still in place. The wires across the back of the paintings were still in place. Nothing was broken. So someone or something didn't want the pictures off the wall, so they were lifted off to the hangers and placed on the floor upside down. This caused the motion detectors to go off. For the duration of that artist showing, the purple cow paintings were removed and placed on the floor at the end of the night, and that ended the 3 a.m. alarm calls.
My goodness.
And that's our stories for tonight.
I don't understand why anybody would have something against a purple cow.
No, especially not your sister. She's got purple cows all over her place.
Oh, well, that's her husband's thing.
Well,
he likes cows.
I like purple cow ice cream.
I don't. I do not like purple cow ice cream at all.
You just bought me some the other day.
I did not.
That ice cream you bought me.
Was that a purple cow?
It was purple cow.
Well, see, I knew you liked it.
Actually, I think it's the ice cream sandwiches that are down there.
No, that's different. I don't know.
How is that different?
Because the ice cream in the tubs just tastes weird. I don't know. I don't like them.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's beside the point.
All right. So, we've got Rick Hale coming up. We've got just a little bit of a news to talk about, but let's take a quick break first.
Hey, guys. Have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
All right, Tracy, I want to keep reiterating this. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's important.
We would never beat a dead horse. How cruel would that be?
It's not very cruel. They're already dead.
It's still cruel.
It's some type of mutilation, but I don't think it's cruelty.
Well, how would you feel like if you were like that way and then somebody just kept hitting you in the head?
I didn't say it was morally wrong, but it's still not cruel to the horse. He's not feeling anything. Anyway, we don't want to beat any type of horse. So, or purple cows.
Yeah.
With that being said, the location for the Gatlinburg show with the confessionals has been changed. We mentioned it last week, I believe, but I want to keep mentioning it. And I've sent out, if you've got tickets, I have sent out an email already and I've updated all the information on the website. So you can go see all that. But the show will now be at the Black Bear Inn and Suites. It's right at the very end of the strip. So we went from one end of Gatlinburg to the other.
Didn't we though? We did the extreme, actually.
Well, we started off in Pigeon Forge.
Yeah.
Then it got moved to Gatlinburg, and now it's at the other end.
Oh, my gosh. That's just like how I lived on my house. I was at the end, then the middle. I mean, no, whatever. Go ahead. Sorry.
But anyways, this is actually a much nicer facility, and it's a bigger facility.
Yes, you guys.
And they are actually donating the space to us so we can still give the money to
the veterans.
The veterans at the American Legion.
Yay! That's so wonderful.
Yeah, so they don't miss out on anything, and we get a bigger facility. So now, that means it was sold out. Now there are like 40-some tickets left.
Mm-hmm.
So we went from 100 tickets to 150.
Yes. More the merrier. You guys, come on. It's a great time of the year down there. Beautiful pumpkins and fall stuff everywhere. It's like our favorite time to go there. It's just beautiful. Without all the leaves should be changing, I think, by then. Or
we got married and had our honeymoon down in Gatlinburg, and we go back almost every single year for our anniversary.
We do.
Which is the day of the show.
Oh, it's the day of.
The day of.
Oh, that's far.
Yeah.
You're so romantic.
But we're going to go down there early, so we got a couple extra days to
ourselves. And we would not want to spend it with anybody else but you guys. So we are so looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. And on top of that, if you've never been down to Gatlinburg, everything is walking distance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are staying in downtown Gatlinburg, you can walk to the show.
Yep.
But it's also parking is kind of a pain if you're not staying down there, because I don't mean that it's a pain. There's all kinds of parking spots, but it's going to cost you about $15 a day to park.
Right.
But you can do everything, park and do a bunch of stuff. The show is 1 to 5.
Yeah. So you can be there all day and do whatever you want before the show, after the show.
Yep. And we scheduled the show between 1 and 5 so people could do stuff before and afterwards. Because there's all these great shows in Pigeon Forge, which is like 15 minutes away from Gatlinburg.
Yes.
Nobody goes to Gatlinburg without going to Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg.
It's
what you do.
No.
They're 15 minutes apart. They're two completely different places if you've never been there. Gatlinburg is fun and shops, and there's some bars and stuff, but Pigeon Forge has all kinds of shows, country music shows. We go to a theater down there called Memories.
I love it every time we go.
Elvis impersonator, then they have two or three other impersonators along the night. That's always our favorite thing to do. Then, of course, you got Dolly Parton Stampede.
Mm-hmm.
You got Dollywood. All kinds of stuff down there. And Dollywood, they'd probably be doing their pumpkin stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So they usually have like a night where they you walk through with all the carved pumpkins and the candles and all that. But they'll probably
You have kids, bring your kids.
This good thing you brought that up. This is a kid-friendly show.
Yep.
Tony from the Confessionals, Tony's very religious. Everything he does is family-friendly. Same thing with us. So you're going to get to see the two family-friendly shows. Feel free to bring your kids.
Oh, yeah. They will have a blast.
And, you know, I'm going to go out on a limb since this place is huge now. If you have kids and want to bring them, we won't charge you for the kids.
No.
We have plenty of room now.
Right.
So that's a good thing. So if you were planning on coming but weren't going to bring the kids and now that changes stuff, feel free. Bring the kids. Kids won't need a ticket.
Yay.
I'll tell Tony I said that later. Anyway, that's really all we got other than the fact that don't forget we have a cruise that's leaving a month from now. I mean, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. A year from now.
Oh, I was going to say
the cruise is leaving a year from now.
Yeah.
So you still got plenty of time to get on board, make payments and stuff like that.
Yep.
So
we're having a good result so far. A lot of people are doing it.
You can finish paying it off. Start, just make your deposit on it. And then you don't have to make any payments till like tax time if you want to pay it off with your taxes. Or maybe you got a bonus coming in from work later this year or something like that. You know, so you don't have to do that. Or you can just keep making payments all the way up to July and pay it off.
Yep.
But there you go.
We had a lot of fun on the last one, guys. I hope you all come to this one because it's going to be fun.
It's an extra day this time. And going to a different place.
Yep.
All right. Tracy, what do we got going on over there?
Well, for our iTunes, we have our lovely Mojo Lobster. Thank you for your review, honey. Rock Music 8 and Susan Bowman. Thank you guys for your reviews. They were very, very, very nice. And we can't thank you guys enough for taking the time to do those reviews because those reviews really help us out a whole lot. And they mean a lot to us. And we just appreciate y'all so much for doing it.
And guys, it's the spooky time of year. It means extra, extra, extra much if you actually will leave reviews now. Was that not a word?
No.
Extra, extra, extra much?
No. What the heck?
Well, I can't say extra, extra more.
How about just saying, just do it.
It means more now.
Just do it.
If you leave reviews because is when everybody's looking for paranormal shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That will help us grow tremendously.
Because you know why? We want to be growing.
That's funny.
Oh. Well.
Nobody gets that joke except for us.
I'm sorry. Well, anyway. Yeah. Just come on, guys.
No Patreon supporters this week. No new ones.
Uh-huh.
Let's listen to Rick Hale.
Why don't we?
Well, let's do it.
All right.
Hey, guys. You know, I always love it when I have repeat guests on and, we've had Rick Hale on the past. He's an author and a paranormal investigator. He's also the host of the Shadow Initiative Paranormal TV with our other buddy, Stephen Lancaster from Norman the Doll fame. Rick, thanks for coming on with us again.
Thanks, thanks for having me again, Jerry. This is great. You have just an extraordinary show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, I got your approval one time in the past to actually read a couple of your stories that you had in a couple of magazines on some of our Patreon bonus stuff, on some of our short stuff. And I love your work. I think you're an excellent writer. And
thank you.
Anything that I see that's got your name on it, I try to gobble it up.
Well, thanks. Yeah, you know, what I like to do is with the stuff that I write, I like to make it very accessible and very, you know, just easy for people to understand. You know, if I can both entertain you and educate you, then, you know, I did my job as a writer.
Talk to me a little bit about the Shadow Initiative, your paranormal TV show. It was something that when you were on the air before, you guys were doing it, but it was kind of different. You've kind of changed formats or something since then, as far as not necessarily format, I shouldn't say, but the way people view it. So tell people how they can watch the show now.
Well, we started off on YouTube, you know, as most people do. And then we recently got picked up by Scareplex, which is a new streaming service. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about Scareplex. Scareplex really cares about its creators. It really cares about the people that have a film to make or a TV show that they put on, and so it's a great new platform that we're doing. So yeah, I mean, if you want to find our show, you're gonna have to go to Scareplex.
Now, is that something you just get on a computer? Can you pull it up like on a smart TV, like on Roku, or is it more like a Shutter, or is it more like, you know, just computer stuff?
Not, I'm not really sure yet if you can get it on Roku, but it is an app at the Apple Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Okay, perfect. Give everybody an idea of the kind of stuff that you and Steven talk about on that show.
Well, you know, Steven and I, we work under the ideology that paranormal land, as I like to call it, kind of has a thinking outside the box problem. Right now in you know, paranormal land and paranormal entertainment and television, it really is only like maybe 5 or 10 people that have a show on television or whatever. And we want to give people that alternative, you know, just normal guys, you know, two guys talking about ghost stories, about paranormal topics, monsters, aliens, that kind of thing. We're just, I guess you could say we're kind of the anti-paranormal entertainment.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys, you do a good job of where the big name shows, we'll say, and leave it at that,
yeah,
are kind of over-centralized. They overhype everything. Everything's just kind of blown out of proportion for the sake of entertainment. And you guys aren't like that. You guys are a lot more realistic takes on the paranormal.
Well, you know, Stephen Lancaster and I, we're both, you know, two guys. We've been at this for a while, a long time, long before, you know, the great paraboom of 2004 when ghost hunters hit sci-fi. I've been investigating the paranormal since 1991, and I've had an interest in it since 1982. Stephen has been, he's had a lifelong interest in it as well, and he's been investigating since the 90s. So, you know, we have a more down-to-earth approach to this. We're not trying to be the next big paranormal superstars. We just want to put something out there that people can relate to or listen to, watch, whatever, and be like, yeah, I know where those two guys are coming from.
Well, you guys take a skeptic's approach to things too, and I think people aren't used to that anymore, because, you know, everything on TV now is it's demonic or it's this or it's that, and it's you know, yeah, there's no way this could possibly be the you know, the pipes or the electrical breaker box. Sure. It's not possible, you know. But like you said, back when you guys were starting out, you know, there wasn't anything to compare it to on TV, and it really was all about trying to debunk everything until you're left with no other choice but to say that it's paranormal.
Well, the thing is, like with me, I'm not really what you would call a debunker. When I conduct an investigation, I don't go in as a believer or a non-believer. I just go in as somebody who observes, documents, and reports. That's what I do as an investigator. It's like I've said before that I believe in the phenomena, but I don't believe in every single ghost story or monster sighting or alien abduction out there. But I'm definitely not a debunker, not in any means. It's like, you know, if you say that, I always joke that if I'm in your house, it's because you want me there. And if I can find something there that I believe is paranormal, I'm going to tell you. But also too, I mean, I've been in a few homes in the past where there were people who there was high infrasound in their house or high electromagnetic field. I even had one guy who had was getting real small doses of carbon monoxide poisoning that was causing him to hallucinate and thinking that he was experiencing something that wasn't there. And during that investigation, we actually told him that it's like, if you don't get this fixed, you're going to turn into the thing that we're looking for. And you don't want that to happen. So, you know, it's like, I don't really consider myself a debunker. But you know, like I said, I definitely believe in the phenomenon, but I don't believe every story that I hear.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's the approach that we take. I mean, all the stories are fun, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that they're all 100% true, or it doesn't mean that the person is lying. They like you said, with that gentleman, he actually had something going on medically because of the carbon monoxide that was causing right. something. So he believed 100% what he was, you know, what was happening to him, whether it was real or not.
Of course. You know, it's very rare that you will actually come across somebody who is intentionally or knowingly hoaxing a haunting. I mean, usually it's people who are good intentioned, who really do believe that they have something there. I had a woman years ago in Lake County, Illinois. That's where I live. And, you know, she really did believe that she had something in her house. And, you know, after spending all day there and all night and we actually going back again, just, you know, we couldn't find anything. And I had to tell her, I'm like, I'm really sorry, but I can't find anything in your house that tells me that it's haunted. She didn't like that answer, but I'm not going to tell you that something is there when I don't think it's there. Like you were talking, like you referenced the whole, you know, demon thing. That's just, I don't even know where that came from. I mean, that's not even something we even considered 20, 30 years ago, you know, that, you know, demons are infesting your house and all that. That was almost unheard of. But then again, I also come at this from a very secular standpoint. If I even so much as suspect something like that is going on, I'm going to tell that person that they need to go see their clergy, because I'm not clergy, don't want to be clergy, and I'm really not qualified to deal with that kind of thing.
Have you had a situation like that in the past?
One time I had something that I thought was, okay, this is extraordinarily frightening. But really, at the end of the day, I just think it was, you know, if you're an asshole in life, you can be an asshole in death. And I think that that's what was going on with this particular haunting. This spirit was just being a big jerk. So it turned out not to be anything that was, you know, otherworldly or inhuman. But that's not to say that that kind of thing doesn't exist. I don't know enough about the spirit world to say that doesn't exist. You know, if I'm being completely honest with you, that would be my answer every single time.
When you go in on an investigation, what type of tools, as far as like equipment, do you like to use? What are your go-tos?
I like to be as non-intrusive as possible. I remember my first investigation, I had a tape recorder, a camera, and a piece of and a pad of paper and a pen. That's what I had. So it's like, you know, when I look at all these people now, and I've belonged to these big groups where they go in and they're carrying, you know, suitcases filled with equipment. And it's like, I'm not going to say that it's foolish, but it's time. It wastes time. You got to set all this stuff up when you can just all you need is an EMF detector, a camera, and a tape recorder. And that's basically all I ever use.
So what are your thoughts on, you know, I know you don't use them per se, but like, let's say a REM pod. And for those mm-hmm. listening that don't know what a REM pod is, it basically, if it's sitting down, if you get really close to it or over top of it, it will set off some lights and set off some bells and whistles, more or less. But it's designed for encroachment. What do you feel about that particular device?
I think that a lot of those devices pick up stray radio waves, and they do, you know, it gives you like a false positive. There was one investigation that I was on with a bigger group, and we were using one of those REM pods, and I feel that I was communicating with something. Like, I feel like it was actually answering the questions. You know, you do like the whole, you know, one knock for yes, two for no thing. It's a very, you know, OG technique. We were kind of using that with the REM pod, and this location that I do believe was actually haunted, you know, for lack of a better term. And I do believe that I was communicating with something, but it's like, you know, with something like that, that's different. Other times it's just like randomness, stray radio waves, somebody's cell phone setting it off. Maybe somebody's moving too close to it. Maybe a fly is landing on it. I'm not going to completely rule it out because of that one experience that I had. But I would say that know how to use it and know what could possibly, you know, make it go off.
Let me ask you about two more pieces of equipment, because I'm sure. Curious what your thoughts are. First of all, what about dowsing rods?
I've used dowsing rods for years. I have a pair. I actually have a pair. My wife bought me this great pair for my birthday one year. You know, dowsing rods have been used for centuries, finding things like water, you know, whatever. I have used them on investigations many, many times with some really interesting results. Standing perfectly still, not moving. I know people will say, oh, it's the idiometer effect. I get that and all. But when you actually have something answering questions, then that goes beyond the idiometer effect. I like them and I use them.
What do you think about the new craze of the Spirit Box apps that you can get on your phone? Do you think there's any credibility to them compared to an actual Spirit Box?
I think that anything you use on your phone is purely for entertainment purposes. So, I mean, I have used a Spirit Box at other investigations, did have some interesting results, but it's one of those things where it's like the question is always in the back of my head that it's like, is this just picking up, you know, something, or is this just randomness? It's possible. But, you know, anything with like phones and all that, I think that that's just for entertainment purposes only.
I kind of feel the exact same way, but it's amazing how many people that I've seen recently, and I mean recently in the last 3 years or so, that mm-hmm. use those on, you know, I've seen them used on tours at Waverly Hills. I've seen mm-hmm. them at Bobby Mackey's. I've seen them at, I mean, and these are experienced investigators. And it always, I guess it kind of surprises me because I always thought of the phone thing to be gimmicky as opposed yeah. to a regular Spirit Box.
It really is. I was on one investigation where somebody was using that ghost finder thing that it was almost like radar.
And yep, it's like, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, you're doing a thing of like, dude, please stop. it's a gimmick. It's for entertainment purposes only. And it's for fun. It's not to be taken seriously. But I mean, hey, if you know how to use it, and you're using it properly, and it appears to be working for you, you know, far be it from me to tell anybody how to spend their money or what to use. That's not my business. If that's what you want to use, that's what you want to use. All I can say is just know how to use it.
Tell me about one of your most favorite experiences that you've had paranormal investigating. Is there a couple that just stand out like, oh man, that was just like the holy grail of paranormal investigating?
Without even thinking, I'd have to say a house in Waukegan, Illinois. I love doing private home investigations. I think that's where like the real investigating is done. That's not paranormal tourism, which is like all the rage these days. So anyways, this house in Waukegan, Illinois, it actually appears in my second book, Behold, Shocking True Tales of Terror and some other spooky stuff. This family, they were an Armenian family. They were, you know, they had been in this country for a while, but, you know, and it'll get to why that is salient to the conversation, them being an Armenian family, in just a few moments. So we're standing in the kitchen and we're talking to the elderly woman in the house. She is the one that claims that all of this stuff happens around her. So we're talking to her. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, I'm looking towards the front room, living room, and this woman just appears. Like she just appears out of nowhere. She's got blonde hair. Look, and she looks like she's wearing white nurse's scrubs. And I watch her just walk real slow and then hang right into this room that's in this hall. So I grab another investigator, run into this room. The only two people in this room were the homeowner's daughter and her friend who was African-American. And the reason that's salient to this is because both are, you know, they're very dark skinned, very dark haired. There was absolutely nowhere for a tall, blonde haired woman in white nurse's scrubs to even go in this room. So we're in the room and we're talking to the two girls. And, you know, we're getting like hits on an EMF detector. I'm doing EVP voice recordings. And I look out the door and there is like a dining room that's right across from this girl's room. And all of a sudden I see like this black shadow go darting right through the, dining room. And, that was like that experience to me was extraordinary. And it's actually, like I said, it's in my book, my second book, Behold Shocking True Tales of Terror and some other spooky stuff. And it's in the chapter called House of 100 Spirits, because I really do believe that this house was infested. And here's the reason why. We caught a EVP later in the evening. And on the EVP, you hear a voice say they want us to come in through the window. So I believe that this huge bay window that was in the front room area was acting as kind of a portal for these spirits to come and go at will. Like this family, there wasn't anything that was malicious or, you know, evil or anything like that in their house. But I really do believe that this house was just infested with ghosts, and they were coming through the window.
What do you think enables something like a window like that to become a portal?
Well, I think that portals can either be naturally occurring, as we see in a lot of Native American folklore. We see that quite a bit. And also, I think that some of these portals can be opened through, you know, occult means, magical means, whatever. You have, you know, people for whatever reason are just gifted and talented to do this kind of thing, and they're able to open this up. I really don't know how a portal could have opened in this house. Nobody had ever dabbled in anything, you know, occult-wise, or at least they never admitted to it. So it's kind of hard to say. And it could have been naturally occurring. I just really don't know.
What do you think shadow people are? Or is there one answer to that?
My personal take on shadow people are just ghosts that can't manifest completely. That's what I think.
Okay, that's interesting. It's just, you know, some people feel like obviously that shadow people aren't true ghosts. They're something different, some more of a non-human form, but not necessarily evil. Just, you know, it's a strange phenomenon when you think about it.
Right. You know, traditionally, like in the Western regions of our world, we're kind of brought up with the whole idea that black or something dark is bad. You know, the villain always wears a black hat in cowboy movies. So I think that we're kind of conditioned to think that just because something is dark, that means that we really can't understand it or it must be evil. And I think that that's where a lot of that comes from.
What got you into the paranormal? You said you've been investigating since the early 90s. What was it that started that off for you?
Well, my interest began in 1982. I was 8 years old, and I was spending the weekend with my grandparents. My parents had just recently divorced. My mom stayed up in the northern parts of northern Illinois. My grandparents lived in Franklin Park, and my dad lived in on the northwest side of Chicago. We were staying with my grandparents that weekend. My sister wasn't with because she had the flu or she was sick or something. My cousin and I, we just got done watching a Cubs game, watching, you know, the Cubs lose again. And
on WGN, no doubt.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure it was WGN. But so my cousin had fallen asleep. I got up to go to the bathroom. Now, if you're not really familiar with these old buildings in Chicago, you have the front room and then you have a long hallway. And in the back, usually there's a bedroom and the kitchen and there's a bathroom and another bedroom that's off this long hallway. This hallway in my grandparents' house, it didn't have a light in it. So my grandmother would always leave the bathroom light on for us and the door open just enough so we could see that light and find our way. So I got up to go to the bathroom and I'm walking towards the bathroom and I see like a shadow walking around. And now my grandparents, they had a bathroom in their bedroom. So there would have been no reason for them to be in this bathroom. And the two of them and my cousin and I were the only four people in this house. So I'm getting closer thinking that one of my grandparents are in there. And all of a sudden the light just clicks off. And out into the hallway walks this woman. Now, it's not my grandmother. My grandmother was a very short woman. Oh, hang on a second. My son just came through the door. Sorry about that. My grandmother was a very short woman. This was a very tall woman, and she was much older. And I remember looking up at her, and the thing is like, I wasn't afraid of her because she just seemed very normal, like she belonged there. And she turned around and she looked down at me and she said with this like really thick Irish accent, "My, what a fine young lad." And then she touched my face. And then she turned around and I watched as she walked towards the kitchen and just disappeared. Now, everybody in my grandparents' house knew that the house was haunted. Everybody knew. You would hear footsteps. You would hear a woman singing. You would hear whispers. My cousin Vicky, who was visiting from Alabama, this was a few years before I had my experience. She got a little too close to the stove, which was on, and it was hot. And she felt a hand on her shoulder and a voice say in her ear, "Now don't get too close to the stove. You'll burn yourself," in this same Irish accent. So what turns out is that I believe that, and also my grandmother confirmed it, this was the spirit of Mrs. McNett. She was the woman of the man who owned the building that my grandparents lived in. And he was still alive. So, and he lived in the flat above them, in the apartment above them. And for whatever reason, Mrs. McNett just decided to, stay in the house. And she was just this kindly old lady who died about 10 years prior to that. You know, that was like that first real experience that absolutely turned me on, you know, and I would go to the library and they would be like, "Oh, this is the spooky kid again, asking about all the, you know, books with ghosts and stuff like that." And I was lucky because I had two really great resources. I had the resources of the town my mom lived in. And then I had the Chicago Public Library that I could get books out of. And one of the authors that I really, well, there were three authors that I really gravitated towards was Hans Holzer, Brad Steiger, and of course, Peter Underwood. And those were like the three greatest teachers. Well, two of them I never knew, but Brad Steiger, I actually used to talk with quite a bit before he passed away. Those were like the three greatest teachers I had.
I've got books by all three of them right to my left. So.
Oh, yeah, so do I.
Give me an instance to where, and I know you talked earlier about the one case kind of being scary where the a-hole was the ghost there, but give me an experience you had that maybe kind of freaked you out a little bit, something you wasn't expecting that maybe overwhelmed you a little bit at the time.
Okay. So I can't really say I've ever been scared, but I definitely have been startled a few times. And one of the times was at a house in McHenry, Illinois. And McHenry is a town and county up in Northern Illinois. And we were in this bedroom and I had the FLIR and I was pointing it towards the wall. And I'm looking at it, just kind of like panning around. All of a sudden, this face just flies out of the wall at me. And it's like, it has this look on this, like this angry screaming look, and then just disappears. And that was like the one and only time I was ever like, ah. It startled me that bad. Looking back on it now, it was very, very funny.
You know, I follow you, obviously. We're friends on Facebook. And I see that you definitely have some frustration in some of the stuff that's went on in the paranormal community in the last couple of years, it's really seemed to, at least for the bigger names out there, it's kind of been a lot of, I don't know, backstabbing, to say probably the proper terms. It's just, it seems like there's a lot of ugliness out there. And then you've got some people out there that are really trying to push to get stuff back on a positive. What do you think's happened in the last couple of years to just change things in the community? Or has it always been that way and the internet just brings it out more?
I think here's one of the things that happened when, you know, the paranormal really kind of, you know, went mainstream. You had a lot of people that they were like, I want to be the next big paranormal superstar. So they make these investigation videos, put them on YouTube, put them on the internet. And it's like, as soon as anybody else does it, they immediately go on the attack of that person. I don't like the way you do stuff. I don't like the things that you say. Your theories are stupid. You're wrong. And it's like, you know, the dreaded D word, and I mean drama. You just have people that seem to thrive on the drama. And, you know, they want to get ahead in life without actually having like any real talent to speak of. And they'll do anything and hurt anyone that they can to get there. And that's where that ugliness that comes in. But you got guys like Steven and I, like, we're trying to bring that positivity back. We're trying to tell people that it's like, look, man, this ain't going to make you famous. This isn't going to make you the next big paranormal superstar. Just have fun with it. Don't take yourself so seriously. And that's kind of one of the things that we really try to do with the Shadow Initiative.
Rick, it's been awesome having you on, brother. Tell everybody how they can check out your books and how they can keep up with the show and everything else you got going on.
Okay, well, the show is on Scareplex. Like I said, it's called the Shadow Initiative Paranormal TV with myself and Stephen Lancaster. Again, that's Scareplex. You can find my four books on Amazon. The first one, I really have to say, if you really want to get to know me, it's more of a personal memoir is my second book. And that's called Behold, Shocking True Tales of Terror and Some Other Spooky Stuff. You know, I really kind of go into my own personal cases and some of the things that I've learned along the way. But if you're interested in all of them, the first one is called The Geek's Guide to the Strange and Unusual, Poltergeist, Ghosts, and Demons. The second one I already mentioned. The third one is called Bullets, Booze, and Babes, The Haunted Criminal History of Chicago and Illinois. And my fourth and final book is called Ghost Watch. And you can also find me at, I do a lot of work for spookyisles.com, which is like all the United Kingdom and Ireland. And I write a lot for them. So that's basically where you can find me and, you know, and find my work.
As I stated earlier, I think you're a fantastic author. I love,
thank you.
They're good, easy reads for anybody. Some authors really try to be, too smart for the average reader, I think. And if I got to look up a word on at least once every page, it kind of turns me off. I'd rather have somebody, not to say you're not a great writer in the way you form stuff, but it is an easier read for me. And like I said, I just find your style fascinating, and I would urge everybody out there to look up anything that you've written, whether it be for the magazines or for the Spooky Isles or what was the name of that? It wasn't Spooky Isles. What was it?
Yeah, spookyisles.com.
Oh, okay, Spooky Isles. I thought for some reason, I thought, well, that didn't sound right. But yeah, I urge people to get your books. I promise you will not be disappointed. There'll be some of your favorites out there. So thank you so much, Rick. I appreciate it. And best of luck to you and Stephen on the Shadow Initiative, because I already know it's a great show. And I think it's got a good future ahead of it.
Thank you, Jerry. And thanks for having me on again. It's always a pleasure.
No problem. I'll have you on in the future again. I'm sure you get some other endeavors that we can talk about.
I'm sure I will.
I'll try to get you and Steven both on, but Steven likes to hog the mic. And
yeah, he really does. You know, he's so full of himself. It's like, I just got to listen to him all the time. It's like, I've been on TV, I write music. It's like, Shut up, Steven. No, seriously, but he's like really the coolest guy in the world, and I consider him to be one of my closest friends.
Well, and I say that lovingly because that's kind of what you guys do. You nitpick at each other in a fun way on the show. And I think that's what makes it fun is the way you go at each other. So, all right, Rick, it was awesome having you on,
Yeah.
brother. We'll have you on in the future.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for this week. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed giving it to you. That's what she said. Go ahead.
No. Oh, y'all, thank you guys for hanging in there with us. We've been sick, sounding like crap.
Now our voice is still shot.
Yeah, but we appreciate you guys' support for us. It means everything. So we look forward to hearing from you guys, and we cannot wait to see you guys in Gatlinburg. You guys have a blessed week. We love you.